You're listening to Engage with Andy Bush. To connect with the program today, please send an email to andrew.bush@comcast.net. That's andrew.bush@comcast.net. Now, back to this week's program.
Welcome back to Engage. We're going to continue to be taking a look at the impact of energy and actually energy tax policy on the energy sector. Joining us now is Ernst & Young's America's Tax Leader for Oil and Gas, Steve Landry. Steve, welcome back to Engage.
Thank you, Andy.
All right, Steve, you are in the trenches in the oil patch, which I love. And I have this vision of you, like, getting your hands dirty and greasy, working on one of those rigs as you do this for E&Y and the tax side. But what are you seeing from the production side? How fast are companies shutting down wells and cutting capital expenditures?
Well, Andy, I think that we've seen cycles like this in the past. And what I seem to recall, and, you know, as you get older, sometimes your memory's not as sharp as you'd like it to be. But what I seem to recall is that in the past cycles, companies responded a little bit slower than they have. You know, We're seeing unconventional rig shutdowns maybe as high as 30% already.
Wow.
Clearly above 25%. Some companies calling up to 40%. We've seen cuts in capital budgets at 25% to 30%. One of the things, Andy, that I think is going to be markedly different about this cycle, and we have various opinions as to how long it's going to last, and most of the predictions, by the way, say that we're talking first quarter or second quarter of 16 before we're totally out of this oversupply situation we seem to be in right now. But going back to the response, I see the response being more rapid. The other thing is with so many barrels of unconventional production, one thing that's going to be different about this cycle is that the supply response is going to be a lot quicker, because typically oil and gas developments took 3 to 5 years from the beginning of production, beginning of drilling until the production date. Now, in unconventionals, you're talking about 6 to 8 weeks. So rig laydowns and cuts in capital budget that happened in the first quarter of 2015 are going to have a marked impact on supply by the third quarter of this year. As a matter of fact, just for illustrative purposes, in November, the EIA had estimated that U.S. production would go up 1.2 million barrels a day this year. That was in November. Their January estimate has that revised down to 500,000 barrels a day. I would think the January response would be, when we look at that same statistic in March, we might be talking about a flat or 200,000 barrel a day production increase for the U.S. That takes a million barrels a day off the market in simply three quarters, which is a phenomenal response.
Wow. Three quarters. Yeah, that you know, and ladies and gentlemen, this is one of the biggest things that's going on in the energy space. I mean, as we're looking at the markets and trying to figure out where oil will stabilize, this is the interesting dynamic of it, because, as Steve mentioned, you know, you can ramp up really quick, but you can ramp down a lot faster, too. I think that's what is just mind-boggling and creates tremendous volatility in the price of oil. It seems to have stabilized around, you know, somewhere in the 40s, but, you know, we just this week went down and dropped down into the mid-40s after being up near 50. I guess the question I have for you is this, Steve. You know, from your conversations with oil executives, what do they see as the most likely, you know, downside target for oil to reach, and what are they doing to get ready for that?
Well, I think that most folks think there's a possibility that oil could go down into the high 30s. What I've heard, as much as we can get a consensus about that, Andy, is that they really think the second quarter of 2015 is going to be the peak of the oversupply.
Okay.
So that the correction will begin after that in the third and fourth quarter. It depends upon which experts you look to. But you would expect, I think we're at $44. WTI went below 45 yesterday, which some people thought was a technical bottom. But you would hope that we're within 5 or 10% of the bottom, or may have already reached it. The question is, how long is it going to be there? But the other thing is that most oil executives have seen this before. You know, volatility in the oil market is not new. It's just something we haven't had over the last 4 years. But it was just 2008 when we had WTI at $138 in June and at $38 in December.
Right. Yeah, I remember it. Oh, my gosh. That was insane.
Right. So what's really different about that is that response, 2008, that was really related to problems with the worldwide economy.
Right.
What we're looking at now is worldwide economic growth is a little bit slower, particularly in the emerging markets, but we've also have less upheaval in some of the oil markets where there typically are supply glitches. Mm-hmm. Libya is back to producing at near their rates. There is some production coming out of Iraq. You have the unconventional movement. So you actually have a little bit more stability, which has resulted in this oversupply right now. You know, arguably, I'm not quite sure that the oversupply is as big as the market response has been to it.
Mm-hmm.
But it is a condition that will fix itself rather rapidly, even without the help of OPEC. You know, one of the things that we still don't know what the long-term impact will be is that there's a change in leadership in Saudi Arabia that just happened last week.
Right.
Now, they said they're going to hold the line, but even a slight change in their attitude saying that, you know, if oil reaches a certain point, we will step in, could mm-hmm. have a dramatic impact on world oil prices.
Well, that's clearly one of the geopolitical unknowns. Obviously, when you get a change in leadership, there's also a change. There's always the potential for change in strategy by these countries. And that's something that, you know, being in geopolitics myself, I always keep a very, very close eye on changeover. So I think you're right. I mean, that's something we're going to be very keenly aware of. What are the opportunities that you see, you know, given this dramatic drop in the price of oil, it's not going to stop for a while. What do you see for E&P companies? What are the opportunities from this big drop in the price of oil?
Well, you know, one of the big drivers of what an E&P company is judged on is their ability to replace reserves. The reserve replacement ratio is a very big indicator. They have an opportunity right now to replace reserves at a much lower rate than they've had in the last 5 years. So the companies with strong balance sheets, you really kind of see a two-pronged effect when they say, look, we're cutting capital expenses. Part of cutting capital expenses is you certainly want to stay inside the cash that you're generating. It's not a time in which you'd like to necessarily go out and leverage up your company.
Right.
You're not sure the cycle is going to lead in your entire cash situation. But
sure.
The other thing about cutting your capital expenditures is you might actually be able to add a lot more reserves by buying up companies that are leveraged at these low prices than you're able to create reserves by drilling yourself. And so I think that if this cycle continues through the second and third quarter, we're going to see a flux of transactions like we haven't seen in the past. And that's, for the healthy companies with strong balance sheets, a tremendous opportunity to have a reserve replacement ratio in excess of 100% this year. That's something they haven't had the luxury of having the last several years.
Wow, 100%. That's amazing. Well, in this vein, you know, what are the targets? I mean, we talked about some of the highly levered guys. You know, what are the leverage ratios that you think that will drive some of these guys out and be targets for takeovers?
Well, you know, you're talking to an accountant, so we tend to be conservative, but typically in the E&P.
Among other things, yes.
Typically in the E&P area, we like to see companies kind of stay below a 2-to-1 debt-to-equity ratio.
Okay.
So your companies that are below that and have a lot of leverage there, actually have some cash sitting on the balance sheet, will be able to work with that. You know, in a time when there's low prices, you may want to go slightly higher than that. But the companies that are highly leveraged, you know, that have leverage ratios 2.5, 3, 3.5, 4, those companies are going to have trouble generating the cash flow necessary to cover their debt. The other thing that's going to be interesting to watch is a lot of the highly leveraged companies have hedged some of their production. Most of those hedges won't be able to be repurchased come the second and third quarter of this year because the cost of purchasing those hedges is going to be very high. So while they may be covering their debt and their high leverage in the first quarter and the second quarter of 2015, because they're hedged, those hedges aren't going to last forever. And so we might see it trickle into the third quarter in those high leverage companies.
Yeah, that's interesting. You know, it's always fascinating to me to see the use of hedging strategies and how they play out and when they run off, because a lot of times you'll see that there's some great stories about energy hedging. Obviously, Southwest Air always comes to mind when it when you think about hedging oil expenses and how that helped them survive. But there's also the waterfall effect when they roll off, right? And how do you replace those things? And to your point, I think maybe we don't see the shakeout that most people are expecting in that space until well into the third quarter, when they can't replace those hedges, and therefore they start to run out of cash.
Exactly.
Okay. Interesting. You know, last time you were on, you brought up some fascinating points, and we just have a little bit of time left, but you brought up some fascinating points about oil field developments outside of the United States, specifically Mexico. Where does this stand? Has the Mexican government changed their strategy?
Well, what they've done, Andy, they actually had round one scheduled for early this quarter, and they've moved it back to March. But what they should, in round one, they're going to have bids from outside companies to work on some Gulf of Mexico properties. And most of these properties are adjacent or near to existing production in the Gulf. So when the companies look at the geology and things like that for these first rounds of bids, they will be able to look at nearby producing fields to determine if they think there's a good analogy and mm-hmm. it's in some of the same basins and things like that. The
sure.
other thing that's interesting about this is by doing it this way, Mexico has a huge infrastructure build necessary as they increase the amount of product to get that product to market. Most of these bids for these new drill impacts in the Gulf will have the ability to be tied on to existing production platforms into the U.S. So that they will be able to get to market without having to worry about the Mexican infrastructure. So
right.
it'll be very interesting to watch. They have delayed the bids because of pricing,
right?
But the amount of reserves there and the geology is still very strong. And it will really be interesting to see in this first bid round what types of players are active in the bidding round. You know, is it going to be the mega oil and gas companies, the integrateds, or is it going to be kind of a mid-level E&P? My suspicion is it will be both. But it's possible that the lower prices, even though it may hurt the initial revenue for the Mexican government and people, may actually encourage more people to participate.
Hmm. Interesting.
So I think that Mexico is a tremendous case study, and it's one that hopefully you and I are still talking about things like this 5 years from now. We'll be able to look back and say this was either a tremendous success, or we can talk about the things that they did incorrectly. But so far, the moves they've made have been consistently reasonable. It's
mm-hmm.
possible that when they came out with the final government take, it's a couple percentage points higher than some people would have liked it to be. But I don't think it's in the range that it's going to knock a lot of bidders out. And we'll see that at the end. If they still hold up with March, I guess there's a chance that if the oil prices stay where they are, maybe they'll knock it back to the second quarter of this year. But
right.
it'll be very interesting to watch over the next 1, 3, and 5 years to see which steps they continue to make.
Yeah, as the former trader in me says, well, if I'm looking to add capacity and get access to these reserves, I'm much more interested when it's down at, you know, $45 a barrel because the upside's there as opposed to 110, right? So I think you made a great point that should drive actually more interest in these bidding process. So that's a great point. All right, Steve, tax expert Steve Landry from Ernst & Young, thanks so much for coming on today. It's always great to have you on because you always have a different perspective than most people in the oil patch, and it's really insightful. So thanks again.
Thank you. And by the way, I should give kudos for being a tax guy that didn't want you to mention tax in our call. I probably
yeah.
should make it more tax talk next time.
Yeah. All right. Well, we'll do that for sure. All right. Let's take a break. I'm Andy Bush. This is Engage.
Follow us on Twitter at VoiceAmericaTRN. Get the lowdown on guests, new shows, and your favorites. That's VoiceAmericaTRN.
What makes great leaders? Results? A lasting legacy? Is it making a difference in your life? Or maybe the lives of others? I Lead. The Leadership Connection with host Dr. Linda Sharkey will bring you the practical tips and tools to make you an extraordinary leader. And by doing so, build a better, more successful, and more profitable organization. Our show is all about you, the leader that you can be, and the culture that you can create. Tune in to I Lead, The Leadership Connection, live every Thursday at 5 p.m. Eastern Time, 2 p.m. Pacific, on the Voice America Business Channel.
From the boardroom to you, Voice America Business Network.